You are listening to the English language news of Kan, the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation.
It's 8 p.m. in Israel on Tuesday, the 9th of April. In the headlines, the War Cabinet and the Security Cabinet meet to discuss the proposals for a ceasefire and a hostage release deal. Finance Minister Smotrich demands assurances from Washington that the IDF will be able to continue fighting after a truce. Hamas is still considering the proposals, but says Israel has not met its conditions for a truce. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says Washington is unaware of a date for an IDF operation in Rafah. Turkey starts a trade war against Israel. Israel and the UN agencies blame each other over the question of humanitarian aid entering Gaza and the weather. Rain tomorrow. Good evening. This is Mark Weiss with the news. Contacts on a hostage release deal. The Security Diplomatic Cabinet is convening tonight for an update on the latest round of discussions in Cairo. The War Cabinet convened earlier this evening. A senior Hamas official, Ali Barakeh, said that the Israeli proposal passed two mediators didn't go far enough, but noted that the Hamas leadership is reviewing it. In another development, a Khan reporter says that dozens of families of hostages in Gaza have appealed to members of the War Cabinet to reach a deal with Hamas soon and prevent the Prime Minister from sabotaging it because of pressure from Cabinet Ministers Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir. Unfortunately, those two forgot the value of the redemption of captives and Jewish principles, the families wrote in a letter, which was sent to Defense Minister Yoav Gallant of the Likud and Cabinet Ministers Benny Gantz and Gadi Eisenkot of the National Unity Party, and Shas Knesset member Aryeh Deri, who is an observer in the War Cabinet. 133 hostages remain in captivity in Gaza, but many are known to be dead. Bezalel Smotrich, head of the religious Zionism Party, speaking before tonight's Security Cabinet meeting, demanded assurances from Washington that Israel be allowed to continue the fighting after a temporary truce and that all Palestinians returning to northern Gaza would have to undertake Israeli security checks. Sderot Mayor Alon David has called on the government to reject Hamas's demand to allow Palestinian residents to return to their homes in the northern Gaza Strip. Davidi told Khan that Prime Minister Netanyahu pledged to him in the past that there will be no compromise on this issue. When we reopened the schools, he told me explicitly, there will be no Gazans in the northern Gaza Strip until we defeat Hamas. The mayor said that now, if they now let Gazans return, it will be a second loss. It is our next October the 7th, because it essentially allows Hamas to rebuild and do what it did to us a second time, he said. Prime Minister Netanyahu reiterated today that the IDF will attack Rafah. There is no force in the world that will stop us. There are many forces that are trying to do so, but it will not help, since this enemy, after what it did, we'll never do it again, he told troops today. Israel had promised to coordinate its plans for Rafah with Washington, but U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the U.S. was unaware of a date for an Israeli operation in Rafah. The IDF has continued to attack Hamas targets in the Gaza Strip. Troops from the Nahal Brigade have killed a large number of terrorists in the past 24 hours. A terrorist who participated in the October the 7th massacre was killed in an airstrike in the Khan Yunis area. Khatem al-Ghamri, a senior Hamas official in the central Gaza Strip, who served as the mayor of the Mghazi refugee camp, was also killed. Ghamri was responsible for rocket fire at Israel. The Air Force also attacked a Hamas building and launching pads that were used yesterday to fire rockets at the Ra'im area in the Gaza periphery. The United States does not have evidence that Israel is committing genocide in Gaza, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin told a Senate hearing on Tuesday. We don't have evidence of that, he told the Senate Armed Services Committee. The Jordanian army carried out 14 airdrops of humanitarian aid in the northern and southern Gaza Strip today, ahead of Eid al-Fitr, the Muslim holiday which begins today. The state-owned Jordanian news agency Petra, which also reported that this was the largest airdrop operation to date. Clothes, food, children's games and sweets were dropped. According to the report, the drops were carried out with the participation of the United Arab Emirates, the United States, the Netherlands, Germany and Great Britain, and France and Indonesia, which participated for the first time in a humanitarian aid operation. France's Foreign Minister Stéphane Séjourné said today that pressure and possibly sanctions must be imposed on Israel to open crossings to get humanitarian aid to Palestinians in Gaza. He said there must be levers of influence, and there are multiple levers going up to sanctions to let humanitarian aid cross checkpoints. Meanwhile, Israel and the United Nations are at loggerheads over the question of humanitarian aid deliveries to Gaza. Israel says the highest volume of aid since the conflict began is now reaching Gaza. But Israel blamed the United Nations for failing to effectively distribute the aid within Gaza. David Mensa, spokesperson at the National Public Diplomacy Directorate, spoke about the issue today.
Yesterday alone, enough food went into Gaza to feed every single person there. The UN fails to distribute it, and Hamas steals it. Just yesterday, these are the facts, 419 aid trucks went in, the highest number of aid trucks to enter Gaza in any one day since the start of the war. That's 741 humanitarian trucks in the last 2 days alone. These are facts. Of those, a mere 267 trucks were distributed by the United Nations. We are getting the aid in, but the UN is unfortunately failing Gazans with chaotic distribution. Look, 97 trucks could fit comfortably on a playing field in a football stadium. That's seven football stadiums full of aid in 2 days alone, all delivered safely into Gaza. This is unprecedented. Hamas creates an image of a humanitarian crisis. Where there is hunger in Gaza, it is hunger orchestrated by Hamas. These are the images they create. These are the images they want you to see. I can guarantee three things. Firstly, no one in Hamas is hungry when we've apprehended them. There's been no sign of hunger whatsoever. Number two, Hamas steals the aid. Just watch the Reuters live stream of aid going in and you'll see Hamas gunmen sitting on top of those trucks. And number three, Hamas wants to maximize the suffering of ordinary Gazans. Why? To stop the war and to save their own skins.
David Mensa, spokesperson at the National Public Diplomacy Directorate. The Red Crescent and the United Nations gave much lower figures of aid deliveries than Israel. The UN also pointed to severe restrictions on distribution inside Gaza. UN humanitarian agency OCHA spokesperson Jens Lirke explained that there is a discrepancy between the Israeli figures of trucks entering and the trucks actually arriving at UN warehouses inside Gaza.
And let me be up front here, we will never get these truck numbers to match. And there's a reason for that. First of all, COGAT counts what they screen and send across the border. We count trucks that arrive in our warehouses. Between those two, there are issues. First of all, trucks that goes in, screened by COGAT, are typically only half full. That is a requirement that they have put in place for screening purposes. When We count the trucks on the other side when they have been reloaded, and I'll come back to that. They are full. UN-coordinated food deliveries are much more likely to be impeded or denied access to areas requiring coordination within Gaza than any other humanitarian mission. So this is bureaucratic language for the fact that food convoys that should be going particularly to the north, where 70% of people face famine conditions, are more likely, actually three times more likely to be denied than any other humanitarian convoy with other kinds of material. That's quite astonishing, isn't it? And when you put up statistics with numbers of trucks going in, saying, look at all these hundreds of trucks going in, and you put it against, look how few trucks have actually moved around with the distribution. Well, it's kind of an own goal, isn't it? Because half of the convoys that we were trying to send to the north with food were denied by the very same Israeli authority.
OCHA spokesperson Jens Lerke. There was renewed tension on the northern border today. Several rockets fell in the northern Golan Heights this morning. There were no injuries and sirens were not sounded. Earlier, alerts of a suspected hostile aerial target infiltration in the Upper Galilee was deemed to have been false. Five launches were identified this morning from South Lebanon towards the Western Galilee. The rockets did not cross the border. The launches set off rocket alerts in Shlomi and nearby communities. Overnight, two rockets were launched towards Misgav Am and landed in open areas. A reporter says a rocket was also launched last night from Syrian territory towards the area of Yonatan on the Golan Heights. There were no injuries. The IDF, in response, directed artillery fire at the source of the launches. Overnight, fighter aircraft struck Syrian military infrastructure. The IDF has confirmed the first successful interception by the Maritime Iron Dome system from a SAR-6 ship of a drone that infiltrated the Elat Bay region from the east. The army said the forces in the region worked together with the air control unit and in coordination with the naval ship. As part of the situation assessment, since the start of the fighting, Israeli missile ships have been deployed throughout the Red Sea. The Knesset Committee on the Advancement of the Status of Women today discussed aid to widows and families of the war fallen. The chair of the committee, Knesset member Penina Tamano-Shete of the National Unity Party, stressed the importance of providing support to the bereaved families. Australia's Foreign Minister Penny Wong said Canberra would consider recognition of a Palestinian state in a significant shift in policy as the international community looks for a two-state solution to end the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. In a speech on Tuesday evening, Wong backed comments by Britain's Foreign Minister David Cameron, who has said that recognising a Palestinian state, including at the United Nations, would make a two-state solution irreversible. Wong said the international community is discussing Palestinian statehood as a way of building momentum towards a two-state solution. She ruled out a role for Hamas, which rules Gaza. The Palestinian Authority last week formally asked for renewed consideration by the United Nations Security Council of its 2011 application to become a full member of the world body. The Palestinians are a non-member observer state at the UN, the same status as enjoyed by the Holy See. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez will meet several of his European Union counterparts over the next week to try to garner support for the recognition of a Palestinian state, Madrid said on Tuesday. Sanchez's agenda includes meetings with the prime ministers of Norway, Ireland, Portugal, Slovenia and Belgium, focusing on the EU's position regarding the Israel-Hamas war in the Gaza Strip. Government spokesperson Pilar Alegría told reporters, "We want to stop the humanitarian disaster in Gaza and help kickstart a political peace process, leading to the realization of the two-state solution as early as possible," Alegría said. Sanchez has previously said he expects Madrid to extend recognition to the Palestinians by July, and that he believes there would soon be a critical mass within the EU to push several members to adopt the same position. Spain, Ireland, Malta and Slovenia announced last month they would jointly work towards recognition of a Palestinian state. Ireland's Prime Minister-designate Simon Harris has called for advancing the two-state solution and said his government is prepared to recognise a Palestinian state. Harris, who entered office today, had sharp words for Prime Minister Netanyahu, saying, "The Irish people could not be clearer. We are repulsed by your actions. Cease fire now and let the aid flow safely." Now, An Air with Sha'anan Street, with a song called Sinat Achim, Brotherly Hatred. This song is dedicated to An Air Shapira, who was killed in action in Gaza, and with the hope of the safe return of his friend Hirsch Goldberg Polin, now in Hamas captivity for more than 6 months.
Sinat Achim. היום אני נלחם נגד שנאת אחים היום אני נלחם נגד שנאת אחים ואחיות אנחנו לא חיות אבל תנו לנו לחיות שנאת אחים היום אני נלחם נגד שנאת אחים היום אני נלחם נגד שנאת אחים היום אני נלחם נגד שנאת אחים ואחיות אנחנו לא חיות אבל תנו לנו לחיות מנסה לדבר, מאבד את הכל עברנו הרבה, לא מאבד את הכל שמים הסיכון על היד שלי הם משתיקים אותי כל אחד מנסה להפיל אותי למחות זה יקים אותי כולה רוצה את הביטוי, זכות היסוד דמו, מרגיש בדיכוי, דיקטטור נגמר חעתור, תוריד את השלטר אין סיכוי שתקשיב, מאכיל את האלטר אגו, נטו מנסה לחיות בכבוד אתם מנסים תשתי שליטה כבוד זה לא יעבוד, לא תיבוא סדר חדש אם זה תלוי בי, נחסום כל כביש נזק את הזעקה בלופים יש מקום לכל דעה, אין מקום לקיצונים, נרדמנו בעמידה הם השחיזו סכינים חרדים מהשתלטות הימין ילדים מתים כדי לאפשר השתמטות חרדים כדאי שתכין אשראי דרכון אירופי תסגור את הסאבלט לפני ים ראה תבדוק אולי תעתיה סרט שנאת אחים היום אני נלחם נגד שנאת אחים היום אני נלחם נגד שנאת אחים ואחיות אנחנו לא חיות אבל תנו לנו לחיות שנאת אחים היום אתה בעד או נגד שנאת אחים אתה בעד או נגד שנאת אחים ואחיות עכשיו תורנו אתם מוזמנים חכות משתמטים, אנרכיסטים, תל אביב אוטיסטית, לא מחוברים, אליטיסטים, קוראים לנו ברברים, שמאלנים, קומוניסטים, מדברים על השחיתות בחניה פרארי, מטיפים אידיאולוגיה ממרפסת בפרברים, תראה לי בשכונה שלך משפחה, דוברת אמרית, מסתכלים עליי מגובע בכובע שומרי אסף, יש לנו סונים, הנה עוד אחד נוסף, פקל אמריקה, גם אם זה לא נראה טוב בטיבי, יש מי שמאז לשנות ויש גם פחדנים נאיבים, מחפשים לריבים ככה, אין דרך אחרת, תרצפו לדרך ארץ, תחזרו לביבים, ילובים, פילי מרץ. ורק אני חושב שהוויכוח מיותר, או שגם אתה הייתי לא שם בזה טעש, עוד יום שחלף לו בליצוק אותו דבר, עוד יום שחלף. עוד יום שחלף ורק אני חושב שהוויכוח מיותר או שגם אתה איתי לא שם בזה טעף עוד יום שחלף לא בליצוק אותו דבר כן עוד יום שחלף עוד יום רק אני חושב שהוויכוח מיותר או שגם אתה איתי לא שם בזה טעף
אף פעם לא עשיתי דואט אם מישהו מת ואם להגיד לך את האמת ענר אני לא בטוח שזה היה לי חסר אבל אלוהים ככה אומרים רוצה את הטובים ביותר אצלו במקום בינינו פה ואם כל זה נכון אז ברור שמקומך איתו בחייך לא הכרנו ואני רק עכשיו נחשף יש לך אוהבים הנה עוד אחד נוסף הנה עוד אחד שותף הנה עוד אחד מסכים להילחם כל יום נגד שנאת אחים מנסה לדבר מאבד את הכל אוהביך הנרם איבדו את הכל חוץ ממחשב מלא שירים בהם הכל פלואו ביט ומילים שלך שירים ששרת והשארת ואתה הם אתה וכל מי שלי בו בוער הנר מבין הנר שלך עודו בוער הנר לא רק אתה חושב שהוויכוח מיותר גם אני איתך בזה לא שם בזה טעף הנה עוד יום שחלף למה הכל אותו דבר עוד יום שחלף עוד יום שחלף ועוד שומרים לך מקום בסירה אז אל תדאג אם תגיע יש שם מישהו שאתה מכיר שומרים לך מקום בסירה ועל הבר יש כיסא אחד לך וכיסא אחד להירש
שנאת אחים שנאת אחים
Aner with Sha'anan Street, Sinat Achim, dedicated to Aner Shapira, who fell fighting in Gaza. Tensions in Israel-Turkey ties. Ankara has limited from today commercial exports to Israel, a directive to remain in place until a ceasefire is reached in the Gaza war. The export ban will apply to, amongst other things, steel, building, cement and machine products. David Mensa, spokesperson at the National Public Diplomacy Directorate, spoke about the Turkish trade boycott during today's press briefing.
So on Turkey, our foreign minister, Yisrael Katz, said, and that was released just this morning, you can check it out, that Erdogan, unfortunately, is once again sacrificing the economic interests of the people of Turkey for his support of Hamas, the murderers in Gaza who raped, murdered and desecrated the bodies of women, girls, adults and burned children alive. We've made it quite clear that Israel will not give in to violence and extortion, and we will not condone the one-sided violation of the trade agreements, and we will take parallel measures against Turkey, which will harm the Turkish economy. Now, the foreign minister said that he's ordered the preparation of another list of products that Israel will, for Israel to prevent Turkey from exporting. And in addition, the foreign minister has instructed the Israeli foreign ministry officials to contact countries and organizations in the United States to stop investments in Turkey and to prevent the import of products from Turkey, and to our friends in the American Congress to examine the violation of the boycott laws and impose sanctions on Turkey accordingly.
David Mensa, spokesperson at the National Public Diplomacy Directorate. During the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, which is drawing to a close, more than 1.5 million worshippers prayed at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem, according to Jerusalem police. The commander of the district police praised the conduct of his forces. What we managed to preserve for 5 months and now six is not to be taken for granted. We said clearly, freedom of worship alongside security and safety considerations. It is important to understand that every step we take today and every week to locate and arrest those who incite is excellent. More than 100 people were arrested during Ramadan on suspicion of inciting to terror and expressing support for terrorism. Last week, border police thwarted a stabbing attack when they noticed a Palestinian armed with a knife at the entrance to the Temple Mount compound. Half a year since the Hamas-led October the 7th massacre, the police will tomorrow launch a page on its internet site to identify items found at the sites of nature raves that were overrun by the terrorists. Individuals can enter the site to look for a specific object. A request will receive a response within 60 days. 6 months into the war, the Alma Research and Education Center has produced a report on hostilities in the northern arena. In this excerpt from a briefing, Alma president and founder, Reserve Lieutenant Colonel Sarit Zahavi, discussed the munitions being used by Hezbollah in attacks on Israel.
Hezbollah claimed responsibility to 1,200 attacks against Israel in the past 6 months. This is a huge number. The average is about 50 attacks every week. But if we truly want to understand the reality, we cannot, again, base our data on just this number, because Hezbollah does not claim responsibility to all the attacks, especially not at the beginning of the war. And even now, in the past few weeks, we see that Hezbollah is hardly taking responsibility for the launching of drones, even though the amount of these incidents is raising dramatically. I believe this is because it is afraid of the Israeli response, which again and again and again, each time there was a drone that was launched, Israel, and there was damage, Israel responded against the aerial unit of Hezbollah. Let's talk about the types of ammunition that is being launched against Israel. The war started mainly with anti-tank missiles that were launched mainly against military targets. The situation today is a little bit different. We see more use of rockets, more use of drones, as I've said, and this is good news and bad news, because anti-tank missiles, first, even though there is a drop in the amount of anti-tank missiles that are used against Israel, it's not completely vanished, and there are still a threat to the communities next to the border. These missiles are very accurate. Some of them can be even launched without a direct sight to the target, those who are much more advanced. Their range is 5, 6, 7, and even 10 kilometers. It depends, again, on the type of the missile. We've seen since the end of January that Hezbollah is using more and more the type that you don't need a direct sight to the target. So the bad news is that, again, with these missiles, no alert. It's impossible to intercept them with Iron Dome. I'm saying anti-tank missiles, but actually they are launched against many different targets here in Israel, and they are killing civilians, and they are destroying homes, and they are targeting basically different kind of things here. The good news with regard to the fact that Hezbollah is moving towards more of the use of rockets is that we know how to intercept rockets. But the problem is that these rockets are launched in bigger salvo than these anti-tanks salvos, of sometimes tens of rockets at the same time. And that way, sometimes they are missed and they do hit the communities. Since they are inaccurate, they put at risk greater areas each time. And since they are not accurate, even if Hezbollah is claiming that it targeted military targets in Israel, eventually they endanger us, the citizens of the north. So that's like the good news and the bad news with regard to the change, you know, the shifts in the types of ammunition that Hezbollah is using. Of course, if I'm talking about the drones, we have seen a raise of more than three times more use of UAVs against Israel in the past month, which are much more accurate than the rockets. We can intercept them, but sometimes we miss, and we saw the damages a few times. Their range is up to 120 kilometers, but actually, as we've seen in this war, they are launched to up to a few tens of kilometers from the border.
Reserve Lieutenant Colonel Sarit Zehavi, President and founder of the Alma Center. Two items in for the newsroom. U.S. Secretary of State Blinken says Hamas has been presented with a very serious offer for a truce and hostage deal that it should accept. Three people have been killed in a suspected double murder-suicide in Nazareth. New Zealand Foreign Minister Winston Peters told the United Nations in his speech today that the war in Gaza is an utter catastrophe, saying Palestinian civilians must not be made to pay the price of defeating Hamas.
The situation in Gaza is an utter catastrophe. New Zealand condemns Hamas for its heinous terrorist attacks on 7 October and since, including its barbaric violations of women and children. All of us here must demand that Hamas release all remaining hostages immediately. At the same time, the facts on the ground in Gaza are absolutely clear. More than 32,000 people have been killed. Millions have been displaced. Warning rings in our ears that famine in Gaza is imminent. Indeed, Palestinian civilians continue to bear the brunt of Israel's military actions. Humanitarian and medical workers are being killed, and health facilities and vital infrastructures have been destroyed. Gaza, which was already facing huge challenges from this conflict, is now a wasteland. Worse still, another generation of young Palestinians already scarred by violence is being further traumatized. We acknowledge Israel's belated announcements that will allow more humanitarian aid into Gaza. Israel must do everything in its power to enable safe, rapid, and unimpeded humanitarian access. Israel cannot now be under any misconceptions As to its legal obligations, the provisional measures ordered by the International Court of Justice are clear and must be complied with fully and immediately. Israel is gravely concerned by repeated indications from Israel that it may soon launch a military offensive into Rafah. Palestinian citizens must not be made to pay the price of defeating Hamas. The risks of the wider region being further drawn into this conflict also remain alarmingly high. We strongly urge regional actors, including Iran, to maximize restraint. Israelis and Palestinians deserve to live in peace and security. There is overwhelming support in the international community, including from New Zealand, for a two-state solution. Achieving this will require serious negotiations by the parties and must involve a Palestinian state.
New Zealand Foreign Minister Winston Peters. These are the stories making headlines at this hour. The War Cabinet and the Security Cabinet meet to discuss the proposals for a ceasefire and a hostage release deal. Finance Minister Smotrich demands assurances from Washington that the IDF will be able to continue fighting after a truce. Hamas is still considering the proposals, but Israel says Israel has not met its conditions for a truce. U.S. Secretary of State Blinken says Hamas has been presented with a very serious offer for a truce and hostage deal that it should accept. Three people have been killed in a suspected double murder-suicide in Nazareth. U.S. Secretary of State Blinken says Washington is unaware of a date for an IDF operation in Rafah. Turkey starts a trade war against Israel. And the weather, rain tomorrow. Germany on Tuesday strongly rejected a case brought by Nicaragua at the United Nations top court, accusing Berlin of facilitating breaches of the Geneva Convention and international humanitarian law by providing arms and other support to Israel in its deadly assault in Gaza. Christiana Tams, a member of Germany's legal team, told the 16-judge panel at the International Court of Justice in The Hague that Germany had licensed only 4 exports of weapons to Israel since October, 3 of which concern test or practice equipment. On Monday, Nicaragua urged judges to call a halt to German military aid to Israel, arguing that Berlin's support enables acts of genocide and breaches of humanitarian law in Gaza. The head of Germany's legal team, Tanja von Uslar-Gleichen, said Nicaragua's claim had no basis in fact or law. Nicaragua's case is the latest legal attempt by a country with historic ties to the Palestinian people to stop the Israeli actions in Gaza after South Africa accused Israel of genocide at the court late last year. Here are excerpts from the comments from Tanja von Uslar-Gleichen and Christian Tams.
Based on international law, Germany has, since 7 October, affirmed Israel's right to protect itself against these ongoing attacks. We are faced with a dilemma that Hamas terrorists use the civilian population as human shields and abuse civilian infrastructure to hide their terrorist activities. Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock fully recognized this dilemma in the UN Security Council on 24th October 2023, when she pointed out that Hamas is playing with human suffering and that the fight is against Hamas and not against civilians. Therefore, she has insisted that Israel, in defending itself, must do its utmost to protect civilian lives and thus respect the limits of self-defense and international humanitarian law at all times. The other point I need to emphasize at the outset is Germany has always been a strong supporter of the rights of the Palestinian people. This is, alongside Israel's security, the second principle that has guided Germany's response to the Middle East conflict in general and to its current escalation in particular. Germany remains committed to a two-state solution as the only path towards a lasting peace in the Middle East. building. Germany only supplies arms on the basis of detailed scrutiny, a scrutiny that not only respects but far exceeds the requirements of international law. Arms exports that take into account the security threats Israel is facing, in particular immediately after 7 October. At the same time, Germany's supply of arms and other military equipment to Israel is subject to a continuous evaluation of the situation on the ground.
It is plainly wrong to suggest that Germany has in any way turned its back on Palestine. Germany works with countless partners through various routes, leaving no stone unturned to alleviate the suffering. 98% of the licenses granted after 7th October do not concern war weapons, but other military equipment. Over 25% of this military equipment is destined for eventual re-importation and used by the German armed forces. 80% of the volume that was approved for export was approved in October 2023. Applications for export licenses are scrutinized by different ministries by reference to conditions that are more stringent than those under international law. As a matter of fact, only four war weapons have been licensed for export since October 2023, three of which concern test or practice equipment. Finally, as regards humanitarian assistance, Germany continues to provide humanitarian support every single day under extremely difficult conditions, constructively engaging with international partners.
Christian Tams, and before him, Tanya von Uslar-Gleichen. In the preliminary hearing at the top court yesterday, Nicaragua's ambassador to the Netherlands, Carlos José Arguella Gómez, told the 16-judge panel that Germany is failing to honour its own obligation to prevent genocide or to ensure respect of international humanitarian law. Nicaragua has asked the court to hand down preliminary orders that Germany immediately suspend its aid to Israel. Speaking outside the courthouse yesterday, the Nicaraguan diplomat explained why the complaint was filed against Germany.
People say, well, the principal provider is the United States, the second provider is Germany. Why didn't you go to the United States? The United States simply does not accept the jurisdiction of the court. So we can't come with that. And I should add also that with the experience we had with the United States 4 years ago, even if we had jurisdiction, the United States would not pay attention to the court. We feel that countries like Germany will respect the court, and we have hopes that with what the court decides, it's going to be accepted, and responsibly Germany is going to accept what the court is going to say. So what we're trying to have is to have concrete measures, and we hopefully hope that that's going to happen. But anyway, I think that even the German government is quite aware of what's happening, and what is being done here is making everything public. And I think that's one of the most important things. You can't convince governments by arms or by force. I mean, public opinion is extremely important. And one of the important ways of forming public opinion is here in the court.
Nicaragua's ambassador to the Netherlands, Carlos Arguello Gomez. Now, Tikva Sheish with Lachzor Habaita, Coming Home.
למצוא את הרגע שלי לברוח לנסוע יום יומיים לעבר טעים במוח אני אוהב את הדרכים ואת הזמן שלי בחוץ לילה בצפון צימר בקיבוץ אני אוהב להסתכל על החיים שלי מהצד להבין שאני יודע גם לבד אני אוהב את הצלילים החוזרים של העולם 12 שניות לפני שנכנסים כולם אני אוהב את הפנסים את האורות ואת הידיים למעלה אבל אחי אני אוהב לחזור הביתה אחרי שלא הייתי כל הלילה למצוא את השלווה שאני חי בה לפשוט מעליי את החיים איך אני אוהב לחזור הביתה הלב של האישה שאני חי איתה תחזיר את השפיות שלי אליי כבר ואת כל הרגעים הרגילים
איך אני אוהב לחזור הביתה. את השקט, לשמוע את המציאות שותקת, נכנס לאוטו בלי כיוון, שם בוב מרלי הלקט. אני אוהב לנהוג דרומה, מצפה עד אלת, כביש 40 בלילה, נותן אחלה מפלט. אני אוהב את הגעגוע לכל מה שנעזב, זה עוזר לי להבין כלום לא מובן מאליו. אני אוהב את הנחמה שנתנה לי הבמה, כל הזדמנות שונה לפזר את הנשמה. אני אוהב את האנשים, את המשקעות, אוהב את זה לאללה, אבל אחי אני אוהב לחזור הביתה אחרי שלא הייתי כל הלילה, למצוא את השלווה שאני חי בה, לפשוט מעלי את החיים. איך אני אוהב לחזור הביתה ללב של האישה שאני חי איתה, להחזיר את השפיות שלי אליי כבר, את כל הרגעים הרגילים. איך אני אוהב לחזור הביתה. אז מה פה חשוב? עושה בלילות החישוב, רגל אחת בבמה מנסה להיות שפוי בשילוב, זריקת השלבים הבאים ולמרות אחורי הקלעים, אני לא מחליף את החיים שלי בחיים. אבל אחי אני אוהב לחזור הביתה אחרי שלא הייתי כל הלילה, למצוא את השלווה שאני חי בה, לפשוט מעלי את החיים. איך אני אוהב לחזור הביתה ללב של האישה שאני חי בה, להחזיר את השפיות שלי אליי כבר, את כל הרגעים הרגילים. איך אני אוהב לחזור הביתה.
The October the 7th attacks and ongoing war have challenged Israel's health system in treating both physical injuries and emotional stress. Medical care, an integrative medicine rehabilitation center located in Bat Yam, is opening a new program whose treatment protocols address both the physical and emotional healing processes. Medical Care Center is managed by the non-profit IMFA, Integrative Medicine for All. Medical Care Rehabilitation Hospital Managing Director Shauli Herchik-Paz spoke to reporter Nomi Segel about how integrative medicine is used for post-trauma treatment.
So first I'll explain about the integrative medicine. You know, most of the conventional hospitals here in Israel and around the world are like big garages. But in those hospitals, the body is the vehicle. We are the vehicle. And every time someone comes to the hospital, we try and mend the physical problem of the body. But nobody speaks to the driver, the patient. So if we have on our hands a reckless driver that keeps on damaging the vehicle, our body, that person would be coming in and out of our hospitals, and every time he would show up with a new physical problem, which is usually created by his own way of life. For example, if he smokes a lot, overweight, a lot of stress, not sleeping, all of this, they create diseases. So the integrative medicine approach is to treat the person which is behind the disease. And how do we do that? How do we treat the person and not just the disease? First of all, we need to strengthen the vitality of the person. The vitality is built through nutrition and exercises and sleep. So if we manage to eat correctly, if we exercise and we sleep better, then we increase our vitality. But it also is created through reducing stress and anxiety, because when we are out of balance and we're under a lot of stress, then that's when we get the stress-related diseases. And how do we do that? Through using psychotherapy treatments and all kinds of treatments like SE focusing that balance the system if it's overstressed. So this is about the integrative medicine, how it's incorporated to...
And why is it considered an effective way in dealing with post-trauma?
So first of all, we have to understand this. This is a most important to use the integrative medicine approach when we deal with people that were injured in a war zone circumstances, because they are under acute stress. They were, for example, a person that was for a few months in Gaza. Say he was in Gaza for 100 days fighting. So he develops conditioned body and conditioned mind responses to danger. He's been through danger zone. So his mind and his body had developed through this 100 days. It's like a conditioned behavior. It's like automatic behavior. That means that after 100 days in a war zone, he would be very suspicious. His body would be very aroused. Every small noise or every suspicious movement would activate his stress. Everything would activate his fight and flight response. He's really on the edge. So if he don't deal with this while he's at the hospital, say he was injured and now he's at the hospital, if he won't deal with that, this acute stress response would develop into what we call chronic stress. And from there, it would develop into PTSD. PTSD, that means post-trauma, a trauma that happened to us that creates stress disorder in the body. So the body cannot balance itself anymore. There's a stress disorder. A stress disorder, that means we activate the stress far more than we're supposed to. That means we won't sleep, we won't regenerate cells, we would damage our immune system, we would damage our digestion system. A lot of systems in the body would be defaulted because of that. We overstress, we activate the stress because of this. That is the PTSD. So when a person like that is injured, when he comes to the hospital, we need to deal with the physical injury that he was, amputated leg, whatever happened to him, we need to take care of the physical body. But at the same time, we need to start working on balancing this person and bringing him back into normal operational mode. A trauma is an operational mode. He's in a stress disorder. We need to bring him back and balance him. So it is also true not just for soldiers. It is true for anyone that is under a lot of stress. Like if someone is a mother of a kidnapped person, or someone is a mother of a soldier that is fighting now in Gaza, or someone is not living at home because he was evicted from his home and he will never know when he will come back home. So all those people, they suffer from elevated stress syndrome. So this part, I also have to say, it really damages the healing process, because if you are under a lot of stress, the healing process, your rehabilitation process is damaged because you are in that stress. So it all comes together. You have to work on those dimensions. You have to work on the physical body and you have to work on the stress. You have to balance the person and treat him.
Given Israel's familiarity with these kinds of situations, unfortunately, is that a prevalent approach in general in treating trauma and injury? Or it's relatively new as in terms of providing such treatments as part of the all-encompassing approach to the individual?
I would say, this is the best ultimate approach. Everybody knows that, and also the Israeli hospitals know that. And in rehabilitation procedures, we all know that a medical psychologist is very important to be part of the rehabilitation process. This is something that is known and people know it. But because of what happened in this war, we have now almost 6,000 people that were injured, and the amount of people that they were admitted in the hospital, there was not a lot of time to address those injuries not physically. Everybody addressed the injuries in all the hospitals, but they didn't address their stress, their emotional and stress state of the injured people. So for that exactly, this is what we are trying now to bring forth. We're trying to, we're opening a program for all those people that were already released from the hospital, but they still need daycare services. They still need to come to the physiotherapy center for the next 5 or 6 months if their injury was severe, to have a continuous physiotherapy on their injury to get better. So what we're doing now, we put up a plan, like a daycare service, where they would come in the morning. In the morning, they would get the physiotherapy, and in the afternoon, they would come and we have an hotel in our hospital. They would sleep over in our hotel, and in the afternoon and at night, they will get a private sessions for balancing their stress. And at night, they would have like a group therapy with the group of people that are the same circumstances of people that went through the same circumstances. So we can work on their stress and emotional balance, so we can get them back into a normal life and become again functional. Because if we don't deal with that, and if we won't deal with that, and if it would go now, if like for 6 or 7 or 8 months and they won't be treated, then they can even become dysfunctional. They won't be able to work. They won't be able to concentrate. They would develop PTSD syndromes, and it would be very difficult to bring them back once the trauma is crystallized. And PTSD syndrome the symptoms are very strong. It's hard to rewire them back, to balance them back. So it's very, very important to treat them as soon as possible, you know, to get them balanced again.
So this center has opened already, or it is in the planning process?
This is a new daycare program. It's the only daycare program in Israel that incorporates a sleepover and as I say, dealing with the stress and the PTSD syndromes and balancing the people. And it would open, the program would open by 20th of April, I presume. And we will have group of soldiers and injured people that would come over to continue their daycare service. We have approximately 5,000 people now that were already released from the hospitals, but they need the daycare services for physiotherapy. So they would come over and we will host them as groups, and we will work with them both physically, emotionally, and mentally to get them back on their feet.
Shauli Herchik-Paz, Director General of Medical Care Rehabilitation Hospital. Now, Tipot Drops by Eli Botner and Yeldea Chutz.
ותראי, לא נשאר פה שום דבר כמעט מתוך השפל הגדול לתת הכל ולקבל כל כך מעט ועוד שנה הכל שונה כל כך אחרת כמעט איבדנו את הכל אבל בסוף מצאנו דרך
Outlook, rain over most of the country tomorrow morning, accompanied by isolated thunder showers. The rain will ease off during the afternoon. Thursday, light rain in the morning and warmer. Friday, dry and slightly warmer. Temperatures forecast for tonight and tomorrow. Jerusalem, 11 to 15. Tel Aviv, 14 to 19. Haifa, 16 to 18. Sfat, 10 to 15. Tiberias, 16 to 23. Beersheba, 14 to 20. And Inilat from 17 tonight, rising to 29 degrees Celsius tomorrow. Another look at the main headlines at this hour. The War Cabinet and the Security Cabinet meet to discuss the proposals for a ceasefire and hostage release deal. Finance Minister Smotrich demands assurances from Washington that the IDF will be able to continue fighting after a truce. US Secretary of State Blinken says Hamas has been presented with a very serious offer that it should accept. Hamas is still considering the proposals, but Israel says Israel has not met its conditions for a truce. Three people have been killed in Nazareth. That's the news. Join us tomorrow night at 8 p.m. on Khan Rekha. This is Mark Weiss wishing you good evening and shalom from Jerusalem.